Welcome to 10 Minute Mood, the podcast by Sydney City Psychology about all things psychology, mental health and well-being. My name is Dr. Aspasia Kara-George and today's episode is in fact 20 minutes because I spoke with Dr. Zach Seidler about men's mental health and the conversation was too good to cut down to 10 minutes. If you enjoy this episode, it will be followed by a part two. I hope that you find it useful and interesting. Welcome to our podcast, Dr. Zach Seidler. Zach is a clinical psychologist. He is the director of mental health training at Movember and a postdoctoral research fellow with Origin at the University of Melbourne. And I'm very lucky to call Zach a friend and a colleague as well. So thank you for spending your time today talking to me.
Thanks for having me.
So I'm wondering, Zach, if maybe first you can tell us a little bit about men's mental health as a category. So why is it that we should be paying attention to men's mental health specifically or in a particular kind of way?
I think the reason we should is because we haven't for so long. I'm really one to focus on things that people try to avoid. That's what makes me a psychologist. Shine a light into the darkness and go, what about this? And I think that at least when I began my clinical and research career, it was pretty obvious that this was a blind spot. And that's a bit of a defense technique by men themselves to try to avoid, the deepest, darkest parts of themselves. And so I think that when we look at men's mental health, the reason that we need to pay attention to it is because the outcomes are so dire. There's something that's not spoken about that often, which is this disparity between the number of men who, purportedly actually experience mental health difficulties. So men are supposedly actually only experience things like depression or anxiety at, a third the rate of women, according to prevalence rate. But then when we look at the suicide rate, it's three quarters of those are men. And so we start to go, what's going on here? If men aren't actually struggling or suffering, why is it that they are taking their own lives? And so what we start to understand is that it's because the way that they experience and express their distress, the way that men show that they are not doing okay, is not actually picked up by psychologists like ourselves, family members, friends. It's often brushed off as he's just being a bloke. He'll be fine. He's a grumpy old man, or he's just angry. The amount of guys that I see who've been to anger management before they've come to see me, but that's just the way that their gender development, their masculine socialization, the way that they've grown up to understand what it means to be a man, how you express that, means that the crying, sad, tearfulness that is typical depression, for instance, is just not sanctioned as a masculine expression. And so they show it in other ways. They drink a lot, they take drugs, they get violent, they're angry, aggressive, irritable, frustrated. And we need to start picking up on those early and start to go, this is something that we can actually fix rather than just going, this is how it is.
Yeah, no, I think you make important points there, especially with regards to anger. I think a lot of the behaviours that you're describing get demonised, especially in the current climate, and trying to sort of reframe and understand that that's potentially a cry for support as opposed to behaviours to demonise.
I think as a society, we're not good at dealing with anger,
Yeah, I agree.
So let alone clinicians who, when we're sitting across from someone and he's screaming, at me. He's not angry at me. He's angry at the world or his own experience. And so starting to learn how to actually respond to that in a way that's going to be beneficial. Because instead, it gets pushed down and down and suppressed. And that's where domestic violence rates come from. That's where school shootings come from. It's like there are, whenever people say, we didn't see it coming, I call bullshit on that. There's always signs. There's always an understanding of this trickling down of emotion that is not allowed out. And if we open up our understanding of what distress can look like and how to actually deal with it, I think everyone will be better off.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think
anger is an emotion that everyone is familiar with. I think it's more about working with people to understand what to do when the anger arises, as opposed to demonizing having anger or experiencing anger itself. So I think that's really important. Okay. So I was going to ask you about some stats, but you've already sort of included them there. I know that suicidality is a really big issue. Is there anything else that you want to say around suicidality in particular with men?
Mm-hmm, for sure. The thing that I think is often misunderstood is that rather than mental health difficulties being the key risk factor, so in women, distress is the key risk factor for suicide in them, and in men it's actually situational stresses. So it's financial distress, it's unemployment, it's relationship breakdown. Those are the key things. And often, you know, a guy will come in and we'll talk about that issue and it will be like, no, let's get to the emotion. You know, let's talk about what's actually, and he's like, no, I need a fucking job.
Yeah.
You know? And it is that very thing that if it can be given perspective and spoken about and practical solutions, you know, provided, that's the way to help a man through that circumstance. And so I think that we can all do better as members of society at going, all right, these are actually the key things that we need to be looking out for. So when, you know, a relationship breakdown happens or a divorce happens and there's custody battles and all of this stuff, we need to be swooping in with mental health services for these guys.
Yes.
Because, you know, whether it be emotion regulation or otherwise, they rely on their partners very often for, any sense of, you know, social life, of any sense of, you know, support. That's where they get everything from. And that's an issue that men need to start to deal with themselves, you know, putting an overbearing amount of emotional labor on their partner. But that aside, we can still preempt shit hitting the fan when it comes to some of this stuff.
Yeah. I actually wrote down a quote from something I heard you say. You said, we're asking men to open up more, but are we ready to listen? And I think that quote, it just encapsulates so much for me as a clinician, but also just as a woman in the world. I think the idea that for the people listening to men, we actually have to take a very different role, and are we ready to take that role? And sort of the stance that it requires us to take to listen. Once we ask men to open up, to actually listen to them, and maybe we won't like what we hear necessarily, but how can we create a space where men can first of all feel that they can open up? I think it's a tricky role for someone to take on. It's not one that I think we're easily socialized into. You know, you spoke about the emotional labor of partners and relationships, and I agree with you. But I think it's a very different role again to sit down and actually ask someone how they're feeling, and really sit there and listen to what they have to say. Sort of holding that space.
Rather than be more vulnerable, open up, talk to me. And then they go, no, I can't handle this. This doesn't fit into my mold. No, I said talk about your emotions. And he goes, but I'm talking about it. And he might happen to talk about the physical sensations, for instance.
That's right.
Or he'll talk about the impact that his job is having on him. And he'll talk about stresses in unique ways. And if it doesn't fit our mold, we go, no, you're missing the point. And we cannot continue to go, you need to fit into our box, because that sense of loneliness that men feel in their emotional lives is because that lack of connection is so constricted by what our beliefs are around how to go about talking about this stuff.
Yeah, you're right. I think loneliness is a key word there. There's an alienation, I imagine, that comes from trying to open up to someone and the way you're speaking doesn't fit the language they're expecting. What would you say are sort of some key practical tips, I guess, first of all, for people that want to support the men in their lives, whether that's their friends or their partner or their brother or whoever, what should they be on the lookout for and what can they do?
For sure. So when it comes to those who are trying to support guys, I think that the key is empowerment. That's something that we haven't done that well at. When it comes to help seeking specifically, it's a very disempowering experience for many for many men. It comes with it, you know, these ideas that you're dependent on others, that you're going to be stripped of control and power. And I think that what I try to do, at least clinically and as a friend and family member, is to go, you know, this will make you strong again. This is an understanding of not poking at your weakness, but trying to understand how we can build you back up. Yeah. And so I think that, you know, we know in the suicide space that you know, perceived burdensomeness, it's a mouthful.
It's a burden.
Exactly. Is a really key risk factor for many guys. It's that idea that they are slowing everything up, that they are, you know, that when it comes to their family especially, that they are just weighing on the shoulders of their partner, of their children, and they're better off not being here. And so what's really important is that from the outset, that is debunked. And that is clearly, and the way that I do it as a clinician or as a friend, if somebody is really going you know, through the ringer, is to talk about the importance of their day-to-day role and clarifying that while they might feel useless, they might feel like they are unable to actually do the things that they, you know, their expectations demand of them. Look at all of these things that you don't actually respect, you know, that you are doing, and how important those are. We've also got a great tool at Movember called Movember Conversations, which you can check out on our website, which is literally a conversation starter for, you know, whether it be a partner or a friend who doesn't know how to start that conversation with a guy, because it can be so uncomfortable. And you don't know what words to say. You don't actually know how to connect with this person. And, you know, it's a bit blunt, but as I always say, I've been in so many conversations with friends who are like, I think he's not doing well, but I'm not going to pry. I'm not going to push. Right. And I always say, you know, you think this discomfort is bad. Imagine, you know, going to his funeral. You know, there is no excuse for not having these chats. There is no excuse for not trying to connect and coming at it from different angles, and also making sure that he feels not like he is the patient here, but, you know, the best way of going about that is to self-disclose. So whenever I'm talking with a young guy, I don't want it to feel like that's where the burdensomeness comes in. He is just giving everything to you. So I say, this is something that I've struggled with. This is how I've overcome it, you know. And so at least he feels like we're equals here. There's not this understanding that he is somehow the broken one and I'm here to fix him.
Yeah. You know, I think that's really important, the self-disclosure piece. And in terms of men sort of day-to-day looking after their well-being, so there's obviously reaching out for professional support. But before that, or even alongside that, are there things that you recommend or things from your research that you've found to be really important, sort of keystones for men to just keep in touch with their own well-being along the way?
If anything, informal support is actually more useful to many men, you know, because to date, you know, psychologists, psychiatrists, social workers, we haven't been that good at helping men out. And so we've kind of let them slip through the cracks. And thankfully, friends and family have picked up the slack there. And so I think that, you know, giving friends and family the support to actually be able to help these young guys, but reaching out to your, you know, network and being open and honest with them, and finding just one person who you can connect with. I think that rituals are really, really important, and structure for guys. I think that especially young men nowadays, they're just kind of floating around in an ether of, you know, lack of identity formation and just afraid of who they're supposed to be and what they're supposed to do. There's a lot of rules going on. There's a lot of don't do this, don't do that. Not a lot of this is how you should be. And so I think striving to understand what your passions are and what drives you tends to be pretty useful. Obviously, exercise, you know, nutrition, not drinking too much, and surrounding yourself with people that love you and that you know, understand you and that are helpful rather than harmful tends to be, you know, something that can definitely help. But really what it comes down to is you should take time to consider what is working, what is helpful in your life, you know, where you are going. I think that there's too much blind you know, just following. I think for many guys, there's so many social pressures around masculinity that are fundamentally harmful and that aren't in line with these men's values. And that's when they feel like they're, you know, off the rails. And so taking moments of presence to just stop and check in with yourself and understand where you're going and if that's, you know, the right path for you is something that can never be underestimated.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that idea of ritual as well, and sort of setting some element of routine for well-being. I know a guy who twice a year organises with like a bunch of his male friends and family this kind of getaway weekend, and it's you know, I don't really know what they do there, but the idea is it's really about well-being and just checking in with each other
connection
and just taking a break, you know, and being together, prioritizing that time to be with one another without the distraction of kids or work or whatever it is. And often going away somewhere different really helps to prioritize that connection. There's less distraction around. So I think things like that as well, trying to build in rituals, maybe, you know, maybe there's a sort of thing that you try to do once a week for yourself, and then there's something once a month, and then maybe there's like a once a year thing that you do just to check in, even if it's just in terms of your relationship with yourself, right? Just checking in about where you're at, how you're doing, if you want to reach out for extra support. And then for men who maybe do want to reach out for professional support, they've never done it before, they know nothing about it. They just know that there's this like sort of counseling world out there. What advice would you give them, or how would you sort of, what advice would you give them?
Don't be afraid to start with. But, you know, that idea of knowing what you want and knowing how to go about this thing is a very dangerous expectation, I think, because it's very foreign for many guys. So the one thing that I would suggest is, when you go in, making clear and asking questions around, you know, what is this thing and what you are hoping for, whichever way that may be. I think there's too much silence when it comes to this stuff. There's too much, again, following what a therapist has, you know, as their ideas of what you need. And that's where we end up with huge numbers of dropout, because the guy doesn't feel heard. The guy doesn't feel like he's in the right place or that he's understood, but he hasn't necessarily helped himself in that instance either. Yeah. And so understanding that he is in the driver's seat is something that I always, you know, do my best to clarify with any new client, is that this is your time, this is your money, this is your life, and I'm just here to hopefully, you know, navigate different paths, but they have the control about which way it goes. If they reverse, if they, you know, plow into a tree, they can do whatever they want to do within this time. I'll just, you know, I guess lead them down different paths. And so I think, again, the empowerment is really key, and realizing for many men that it takes time to build that connection, especially if you haven't done it before. And allow yourself to just sit in that uncertain place, which is real weird and can feel very uncomfortable. And you may not, and this is again the idea around gains and what you're actually trying to achieve. Patience is very important, because when it comes, it, you know, it will come thick and fast, these changes. And so talking to your therapist around, how long is this going to take, do you think? Where are we at? Where are we going? And just continuing to have those touch points is essential.
Yeah. And I think that honesty around how you're experiencing those sessions too, right, with the therapist, with the psychologist, whoever it is, you know, if you're feeling frustrated in terms of your progress, that's actually something really useful to talk about. So that sort of forum for complete honesty. And I think also for clients in general, it's useful to know about confidentiality. I think that not everyone knows that up front, and that it is sort of a confidential space.
I love starting. My therapy sessions now with, why do you not want to be here?
Oh, that's great.
Tell me every reason why you don't want to be here, because at least we can just get that out on the table. They'll be like,
We get the hard stuff out of the way first.
I don't want to, yeah, exactly. I don't want to, there's so many, you know, so many guys who are just like, I don't want to talk about myself for an hour. That feels, which is lovely, which is a lovely thing, you know, to hear, which is that, and there's all of this idea around mansplaining and whatever, but the vast majority of men that I see are like, this feels like a selfish thing to do, to put aside an hour of my time, to put aside however many hundreds of dollars for my own well-being when I could be looking after someone else. That idea around protector and provider. And so what I really try to stress is that the best way to look out for others is to make sure that you're ready, you know, that you are prepared, that you are up for it. And you can't do that. Mm-hmm. Just like any sportsman can't play to the best of their ability if their head's not in the game.
Yeah. So true. And you're right. It speaks directly already to the role that they're playing in life, right? And their priorities to actually seek an hour to talk about their well-being seems too indulgent. It already tells you a lot about what's happening for this person.